Hello, and welcome back to Green Living Podcast. This week's guest is Sorrow, creator of Creaturely Soap. Before I jump into it, I wanted to mention that my Patreon is now live. I will talk more about it after my conversation with Sorrow, but I would really appreciate it if you would check it out. That helps me a lot, and it will keep this podcast going. You can find my Patreon by going to patreon.com/greenlivingpodcast, or go to Patreon's homepage and search Green Living Podcast. I am also excited to announce that I am a Purusha People Ambassador. Purusha People is a woman-owned yoga wear company. Purusha People sells hand-printed and hand-sewn yoga wear that is printed on sustainable materials with low impact dyes. There will be more in the description box and 10% off code. So a little more about Sorrow and Creaturely Soap. Creaturely Soap is a small business based in Northern California that makes and sells handcrafted, vegan, palm oil-free soap on their online web shop. 10% of the profits from Creaturely Soap are donated to wildlife conservation efforts around the world. Creaturely Soap was started and is run by Sorrow, a trained wildlife veterinary technician and a college junior studying wildlife conservation and management. Sorrow is passionate about wildlife conservation, the ethical treatment of animals and the environment, music, and nature-inspired crafts and homeware. She lives in the Pacific Northwest with her two rescue rabbits, Fred and Lucy, and her three rescue goldfish. So in this week's episode with Sorrow, we chat about African penguins, Creaturely Soap business, liquid soap versus bar soap, convenience culture, her best soap making happy accident, and how making something with your hands can be healing when dealing with depression. The audio goes in and out a bit for this interview, actually, so if there is a part you want me to try and transcribe, let me know. One part in particular, I ask what penguin is her logo for her soap company. It is an Adelie penguin. And if you hear a little bit of commotion in the background, Sorrow had her bunnies in her bedroom when she recorded, so if you hear a little bit of noise, it's just her bunnies jumping around. So I really hope you enjoy this week's episode, Chatting with Sorrow. Let's get into it. Hello, Sorrow, and welcome to Green Living Podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
I'm really excited to have you on today. You are the owner and creator of Creaturely Soap. Can you tell everybody a little bit more about you and Creaturely Soap?
Yeah, so I am a junior in university right now. I'm studying wildlife conservation. And I started making my own soap about 5 years ago. I've always had really problematic dry skin. So I got into natural skincare at a really young age because that was the only thing that ever helped me with that. So I realized the power of natural skincare and became sort of like obsessive about what I put on my skin. And I'd been making my own moisturizers and masks and all that for like a really long time since I was a little kid. And I eventually just decided I wanted to have full control over my skin, which led eventually to soap making. And I always had like a big interest in self-sufficiency and living low waste as well. So those sort of three things all came together and created my passion for making soap. And that's how this all got started.
So how long ago was it that you started Creaturely Soap?
Creaturely Soap had a really rocky start. It started back in about 2017, but I was at the time moving back and forth internationally every few months, so it was not working. I eventually moved back to the US and have stayed here for quite a while and was able to really commit down to it when quarantine started. So it got its sort of rebirth right around March 2020.
Since that time, it seems that you've really been able to grow a lot.
Yeah, we've seen a lot of growth, especially on Instagram. And you know, I think it just comes down to I've been able to put the time in since quarantine and, you know, sort of connect with other people. There's actually a note about social media is that it's seen as this really dark thing, which it can be, but you can also find really amazing people on there, which is, I think, how we found each other. And so it's been really good for Creaturely Soap, and it's been a lot of fun.
That's amazing. Yeah, and that is how I found you, was from Instagram. I don't remember what thread I was down or, you know, but you popped up and I was so inspired and impressed with everything you're doing. And I was so happy when you messaged me back that you would be available for an episode. And in looking at your website, you recently, I believe it was in November 2020, have a partnership now with SAPREC, which is the Seabird and Penguin Rehabilitation Center. So can you tell everyone what they do, how that partnership came about?
Yeah, I just call it SAPREC.
Okay.
when I was moving back and forth internationally, it was from here in California, which is where I was raised and grew up, to this little town in South Africa, which is where I spent my late teen years, early 20 years. And that is where SAPREC is located. So they're in this little coastal town called Mossel Bay. It's in the Western Cape. And I was there for totally unrelated reasons, but just sort of by a long string of coincidences, found SAPREC after I had already been there for about a year. And I had been working at a youth hostel at the time, and we hosted this ocean conservation group for like a couple months, actually. And they were connected with White Shark Africa, which is obviously a white shark conservation group. And they worked closely with SAPREC, since SAPREC deals with penguins, which is the white shark's food. Anyway, eventually I got connected with SAPREC. I was able to go to their center and volunteer for a day. And was sort of a life-changing experience. I'd always been this maniac for penguins, but I grew up in California, so they were always just this sort of faraway thing that I really had nothing to do with. And so actually going and like scrubbing their poop and like herding them to go get their fish, it really changed a lot of things for me. And I just knew that I wanted to help them however I could. And I knew that that might be financial more than like volunteering, since I wasn't going to be in Mossel Bay forever. So anyway, that was the birth of the partnership with SAPREC. What they do is they basically take all local seabirds, and they will, if there's like a injured, sick, or whatever, you know, compromised seabird, they'll usually get a call from the community. Someone just finds it on the beach or whatever, and they'll go and rescue the bird, bring it back to their rehabilitation center, and just nurse it back to health. And they work with a vet who's really, really great, and he's able to do surgeries and all the stuff. So they're really legit. They do really, really cool work. And they're almost completely volunteer driven. And they're also almost completely unknown. I didn't even know about them for a long time when I was living there. Some difficulties. Mossel Bay has a lot of poverty in it, and so penguins aren't really always seen as a big priority. Even though they are a priority. They're so essential for the ecosystem, and without them, we'd all be in a lot of trouble. So SAPREC is really important to me, both for just personal reasons due to my connection to Mossel Bay, and also because they do amazing work. And with Creaturely Soap, I decided to make them my like official partner, and I send them 10% of the net profits from all my sales every month. And that's able to help them just a little bit.
Yeah, that's so incredible, especially as you said, even living there, they weren't as well known, or you hadn't heard about them. And I bet that was amazing to be able to tangibly be with them, or yeah, even though you were cleaning up their excrement, you know, you're still helping them and helping them to get released back into the wild. And yes. Okay, is that, yeah, I was wondering if that's, as long as they're not too injured or
yeah,
poor health. Yeah.
Any birds that are able to be released, that's the ultimate goal, is just bringing them back to the ocean and letting them live their little wild lives. They do have a few birds that weren't releasable. I think they only have penguins in this case. And so they have them, you know, if they're able to still live comfortable lives, just stay with them. So they do have a few birds that just live there and live out their happy little penguin lives. And they're good for education too. They do tours and people are able to kind of see them, you know, just being penguins, which obviously helps with conservation as well. But the ultimate goal is definitely bolstering the wild population and getting them back out into the wild.
Are you planning on going back anytime soon after the pandemic?
Yeah, I am. I'm going to be going back to South Africa in April because I'm going to be interning at another penguin rehabilitation center in Cape Town. That's kind of my obsession. But I will be going back to SAPRIC definitely, and sometime in the Southern Hemisphere winter of this year. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm so excited.
That sounds incredible.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds like so much fun. And I should note for people that don't know, the penguin is your logo.
Yes, my logo is an Adelie penguin. I just simply love them. So it was just the obvious choice for me. And, you know, I always plan to support penguin conservation, particularly African penguin and those more endangered varieties of penguins, which is something I just touched on briefly. The African penguin has lost about 99% of its population. Humans came to the southern tip of Africa, which is pretty extreme.
Wow.
And there were also 4 species of penguins in southern Africa before humankind arrived. So it's thought that we've already caused the extinction of 3, and we're just right on the verge of causing the extinction of the last one. So everything that we can do for these little guys is really important.
That's so heartbreaking.
It is.
To hear that. So the migration of people into the, and obviously explosion of population of people and loss of habitat has contributed to that.
Yeah. Historically, there was a lot of, you know, people taking the eggs and just eating the eggs and also hunting the birds. So they got basically, you know, poached into mm-hmm. really devastating numbers. And
they don't have, I mean, obviously they're very agile in the water, but they're not used to predators on land necessarily. I mean, yeah. Some birds may be taking their eggs, but not something like yeah. us coming along and being so dominant and, you know, opposable thumbs and whatnot.
Yeah, no, you're right on. And there's so many factors. It's very interesting to look into. We used penguin poop as fertilizer very intensely. For a long time, we don't so much anymore because it's all gone. But penguins use their poop to create their nest box. And so without it, they just like put their eggs on the ground and call it a day. And so they're very exposed. Yeah, predators are a big problem, especially since we've introduced so many predators like cats and dogs. So yeah, climate change as well is a huge, massive problem, as well as plastic pollution. So they are facing a lot of problems.
And can you please tell me again which penguin is the last one in South Africa?
Yeah, it's just called the African penguin. Yeah, it has a bunch of names. It's also known as the jackass penguin, but I think African penguin is the, you know, standard name for it.
So yeah, sad.
I know.
But I'm so happy you're able to help a great organization to
yeah.
be able to help rehabilitate ones that get injured and help hopefully boost the population somewhat, and other seabirds, but mm-hmm. penguins also specifically.
Yeah. I mean, it's never too late until it's too late. So we do still have time.
So going back to your soap company, you are cruelty-free. You support wildlife, as we just mentioned. You have ethical ingredients. You are reducing waste, and you are offsetting your carbon emissions, which is so amazing. I love all of that. And you are the only employee. Is that correct at this time?
Yep. Okay. Yep, it's just me.
Just you. Wow. And why have all of those things that I just mentioned been so important for you and your company?
Those are all sort of values that I have lived in my personal life for quite a while. And I think it all started with being a big animal lover. And I was thinking about this, and the first sort of like ethical decision I ever made was to go totally cruelty free. When I was like a big PETA fan back in the day when I was like 8 or 9. And I had pet rats. So this is what inspired my extreme cruelty free life change. I would like go around and, you know, evaluate all my parents' decisions, and that was really annoying. I went vegan when I was 14. I had been vegetarian for a while when I was a kid. And I've noticed that when, this doesn't happen for everyone, but for me, after I stopped eating animals, I started to see them as actual living beings that deserve, you know, to just live and not be exploited. It kind of changes your whole perception, and it also opens up just these gateways to all these other topics that you mentioned, like living low waste and, you know, environmental protection and using healthier ingredients. I think because there's so many benefits of veganism, like some people do it, they get into it for animal rights, and some people get into it for health, or they get into it for environmental benefits. And so when you start interacting with people online or whatever it is that are vegan, then they start influencing you, and you influence them, and you both are able to see, you know, you're exposed to these problems more, I think, is what it is. And so it just led me to want to live really low waste and to want to, you know, support fair trade and local. And it all comes together is the thing. All these things work together really well. And so when you're really passionate about one, which for me was animal rights, then being passionate about ethical sourcing and reducing your waste and your carbon emissions is being passionate about animal rights, you know, because it affects them. So anyway, I've lived my own life by these values of trying to be, you know, as green and having a low impact as possible. And it just was eventually a no-brainer to have it in my company as well. We don't have any connection to the natural world. We just sort of live in our houses and we go to the grocery store, and, you know, so you don't even interact with wild animals or the environment at all on a daily basis. And some people never do. And so it's very easy to just never think about it, which is, you know, why we're in a pretty big mess right now, I think.
Exactly. I think it's scarily easy.
Yeah. It's all sort of set up that way. And I guess, you know, it started as, oh, it's more convenient for us to just have our one career and we don't really think about anything else. And other people make our food and we don't have to think about that. And other people make our clothes, so we don't have to think about that. But it's just, it leads to a lot of corruption and a lot of obviously pollution and other problems, when it's okay for other people to, you know, make your food and your clothes and everything, but you want to know how it's being made. And we have a lot of work to do on that front, I think, still.
Yeah, it's sad that a lot of it can turn into exploitation of other people and the earth and natural resources. Yeah. And just quality of things are just so
bad.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
And switching gears a little bit, I was looking at your website, of course, and I saw you have a blog post about the benefits of soap bars versus liquid soap. So can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, so there's a few key benefits that bar soap has over liquid soap. And I'll just say liquid soap is, like, I grew up with liquid soap around. I think we all did. I didn't ever know that liquid soap became a thing in, like, the 80s. So from the 70s and before, like, it's been bar soap the whole time.
I learned that from your post. Sorry, okay, I got really excited because I read your post and I was like, really?
Yeah, I know. When I was researching, I was shocked because I it seems like such a staple and people are so into it, but it's only been around for like 40 years. So, but anyway, there's a study by the Zurich Institute of Environmental Engineering that found that people use about 6 times less bar soap per gram than they do liquid soap when they're washing their hands or whatever they're doing. So you're gonna blast through your liquid soap compared to your bar soap, which isn't great from a low waste perspective. And liquid soap also takes a lot more energy to transport because it's almost all water, so it's quite heavy, even though it's not as potent. And they also come in these, you know, kind of round bottles, which makes them quite bulky. Now you can't pack them into like a box as efficiently as a bar soap. So it ends up taking more energy to transport and more space to transport. So more trucks or more planes or whatever it is. So transport it definitely loses. And speaking about the bottles, it's always bottled in, well, it's usually bottled in plastic, which is obviously not great. Those bottles are very rarely recyclable, and the pumps, I don't think really ever, because they're like mixed materials. And bottles take like 20 times more energy than just the typical bar soap. And if you're talking about like a renewable, more eco-friendly material, like a glass or a metal bottle, then you're talking about even more energy to produce that. So not so great. The actual soap, like the liquid soap inside the bottle itself, takes about 5 times more energy to produce than bar soap. And it's also not actually soap, it's detergent, which it just means that it has some chemicals in it that are more difficult to neutralize, which means more energy at a water treatment facility. And if it's not neutralized, if it's just dumped or whatever, then it can have a toxic effect on the environment. So it all those things together, it takes way more energy to produce liquid soap. It usually involves plastic, which is a big problem for our marine birds and our other wildlife as well. And it's not as efficient. You have to use so much more because it's mostly water that you're using. Yeah, so bar soap, even it's seen as like old fashioned or something now, I feel like people just...
Like vintage.
Yeah, like people just don't even want to go there. But if you're wanting to make a more green decision, it's the obvious choice. And bar soap is, in my opinion, seeing sort of a stylistic revolution. people are becoming really creative with bar soap and, you know, making really wonderful products out of all natural ingredients. So I think that's pretty cool.
And the ones you make are absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
I messaged you a few weeks ago. I think you posted something on your Instagram story and you were cutting the soap.
Yeah.
And it looks so satisfying.
It's really satisfying. Everyone should try it at some point.
Yeah. I think it's also takes some artistry because you also have a video on your website of, I forget what scent it was, but it was like the cold press process.
Yeah, that's our coconut geranium soap. It's definitely a bit of a creative process. No soap is alike. And so, but it's the fun part of soap making. I mean, it's the best part, actually. But yeah, I mean, about the creative process, I have like a massive stash of essential oils, and I have a bunch of I only use essential oils and natural clay and botanicals to kind of switch up the soaps. Those are the scents and the colors that go into it. The base is usually the same. And yeah, I just get in there and sort of see what works. And there's always a different approach to it. It never really, no two times are exactly the same. but I usually have an inspiration going in of what I think I want to do. Not always, but sometimes. And sometimes it'll be the colorant that kind of takes away. So if I'm going to use indigo or something, it's going to be blue, and I'll think, okay, you know, what scent goes with blue, and what am I going to put on top of it? But I will say that the thing about making soap is that it's never going to come out exactly the way that you plan it. It can sometimes go really wrong or really, really right. And so you have to be open to that if you want to get into soap making. My best accident that I ever made was my soap petrichor, which is, this was one of the soaps where I just combined the scents that I really love without really a specific vision. And it was supposed to be a black soap, but it turned this sort of muted blue tone because I used indigo and charcoal together, and I just didn't use enough. And the essential oils I'd use were eucalyptus and fir, and like a cedarwood and rosemary, just because I love this combination of scents. And I was not planning anything beyond thinking it smells nice individually, so maybe they'll smell nice together, but they ended up smelling exactly like a forest after it's rained, you know, that smell. Mm-hmm. And that's where the name petrichor comes from, obviously. But I was like kind of floored because I was thinking, I'm just going to make this like black, you know, standard charcoal soap, and it's going to just smell nice and whatever. And I get the soap that smells exactly like rain, and it's blue, and it's just perfect. So
that sounds divine.
Thank you. Yeah, I was really excited about that. And it just goes to show that, like, no matter how practiced you are, your plan is going to be thwarted at least a little bit. It might be in a good way. So sometimes you get disappointed, and sometimes you have really cool accidents like that.
Right. And you can learn, and like you said, no two times are the same. But yeah, you knew it was going to come out good, but it came out, you know, incredible.
Yeah. The thing about rain scents, I'll just go on a little tangent, that, you know, it's usually something that you buy as like a artificial fragrance. So if you find like a candle, it's like rain or ocean breeze, that type of, you know, thing, then that's very often going to be an artificial fragrance, which is most are toxic, have a toxic effect on our environment. So that's why I don't use them. But I had just sort of thought, well, I'm just never going to be able to, you know, make anything like that because I'm not going there. And it goes to show that you can kind of do anything with natural ingredients. I mean, maybe not anything, but they're so diverse, and they're just provided to us by nature. And if you're going for a nature-inspired product, which is what mine usually is, then the options are limitless. And so I encourage anyone who's into making their own DIYs and things like that to get creative with your natural ingredients and don't feel limited by, you know, not being able to buy artificial fragrances or colors because you don't need them. You just get creative and have happy accidents and you'll create really cool products.
And I think what you said about, yeah, like artificial scents, I think once you smell something that's more natural, naturally derived and everything, you'll like it so much more than the artificial candles that you used to buy or something like that.
Yeah, I agree. I think it just, not only does it smell natural and better for that reason, but also it just gives you sort of a connection to the world that you live in. And that's something that I love about natural soap and natural products in general, is that, like, if you use a certain clay, let's say like rose clay or whatever, so it makes your product pink, but you can look at it and know that that came from the ground. That is actually the earth in your soap. And it does give you this little tiny connection to the natural world that I think we all need more of. You know, it obviously doesn't compare to going out and being in the natural world, but being able to bring some of that into your home and the products that you use, I think is really special.
Yeah, and the scent, I know for a lot of people, can bring up memories, or, you know, having that visual too, like you said, of the clay being in the soap can be grounding.
Yeah, absolutely. The scents bringing up memories is a really good point. And as far as natural scents go, I think everyone has something that could bring back memories, whether it's like camping, you know, when you're a kid or whatever it is. Yeah, and I believe that essential oils have quite a few therapeutic benefits as far as, you know, people do use them for aromatherapy, and they can have skin benefits as well. So it's just all around good stuff.
And speaking of grounding, I was wondering, well, we kind of mentioned that liquid soaps are a newer thing. And I don't want to say bar soaps. I don't think they're vintage. I think they're great. I would rather have a bar soap personally. Has it felt more grounding or like connected? I don't want to say the past because it's really not that old that liquid soaps have been around. Or does it, you know, make you feel like really good about physically making them and having them be solid? And like you said, seeing the clay and it's from the earth.
It definitely has. When I think about it being in the past, it's so cool because not only is it from like 1970s, but it's also from like BC times. Like, soap has been made in this way, or at least in a similar way to how it's made today, the cold process version, for a millennia. And so it definitely has, it's one of those things that makes you feel connected to the past when you learn how to make it. It kind of like, I would guess how like sewing your own clothes makes some people feel, or, you know, baking for your family or whatever. It's just one of those old crafts that's always been around for humans, and we haven't really had much of an existence without it. And so, yeah, definitely it does connect you, it connects me to the past in a way. And I think that's especially true for natural soaps, again, because you can use ingredients that have been used by our ancestors for, you know, somewhat medicinal purposes, or, you know, just soothing purposes that have been used for many, many years, long before we ever came to this earth. So cheesy, but it definitely connects me to my past, I would say. And it's just very satisfying to make something with your own bare hands. I think we talked about this a little bit in the beginning, but yeah, like, we don't really make things ourselves anymore. And I think it's so essential to what being a human is having at least something that you craft and that you make for yourself or for your family. It doesn't have to be soap, you know, it could be anything, and it could be something really simple. But I think just for human like psychology, it's important to use your hands and to actually, you know, create with them. I think that's just sort of how we evolved, and it's something that makes us all happier.
Definitely. And as you said, having the natural materials is the best way to do that, I think, as well. Because that connection to ancestors, right? Even if your ancestors weren't soap makers, they still made a bunch of things themselves.
Yeah, I mean, it blows my mind that people used to make everything themselves, because I just can't even fathom that. I mean, living in like little communities and sharing the workload instead of buying your leggings from China or whatever, you know, like the world is just so different. And so we know that this is a big leap, but we know that, you know, people feel disconnected today in this world, that rates of depression and anxiety and all those things are really high. And you would think, you know, they shouldn't be, because we've advanced so much and our lives are so much easier. And, you know, we have modern medicine and machines that do so much work for us, and yet we're more miserable than ever. And I'm not claiming that crafting something with yourself or using natural ingredients is going to cure that, but it's a tiny little step that we can all easily take that connects us to our past and connects us just to ourselves as humans, I think. I believe that it's known that like things like artwork, or I think like baking and stuff like that, it has just a calming effect on the self. So I'm sure that picking up a craft, if that's something that you feel like is missing from your life, you know, it could definitely help, maybe.
And help you connect maybe to yourself, to others, if it's more natural, maybe to the earth, hopefully.
Yeah, that is the hope. Yeah.
That is all the questions I have for you today. I don't know if there was anything else you wanted to chat about.
I don't know. I will say, we talked about SAPREC. The plan for Creaturely is to support a wide variety of wildlife conservation efforts. So we're not going to just focus on penguins and seabirds forever, although I would love to forever. But the goal is to branch out and eventually have other partners and multiple partners and support, you know, different areas, different countries, and different species. And so we'll get there one day. Right now, we're just focusing on SAPREC. I think this is really fun. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so excited to see what the future holds for you.
Thank you. I'm excited too. We'll have to see.
Well, thank you so much for being my guest this week.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
I think everything that Saro is doing with her soap company for a SAPREC is truly inspirational, and I will leave Creaturely Soap's link in the description. I personally bought some hand soap from her, and it is absolutely incredible, and it smells amazing. So I highly recommend getting some if you can. I also think the latter part of our conversation is really important too, about doing an activity such as making your own clothes, soap, bread, what have you. It can be really grounding and connective to the past. I want to thank Saro again for being my guest. I really loved chatting with her. She has such a calming voice, and I hope you all enjoyed it too. One last plug for my Patreon. If you haven't already noticed, I do not have any ads or sponsors for this podcast. That might change in the future, but for now, if you check out the Patreon, that would help me out a lot. As I mentioned, Purusha People is handmade, hand-printed yoga wear that is made from sustainable materials and ethical labor practices. I will leave all of their information in the description as well. You can find me on Instagram at greenlivingpod, YouTube, greenlivingpod, and my website is greenlivingpod.com. Thank you so much for listening.